Hey, all you listeners, before we jump into the podcast, I'd like to take care of a couple legal issues and a little forbearance of what you're about to listen to. Some podcasts are somewhat explicit and touch on some harsh topics when it comes to the mental health field. Listener discretion is advised. Also, for the legal purposes and the protection of our show and guests, we'd like to also remind you that all these stories that are shared by everyone on air are alleged events that have occurred. Please keep that in mind. And again, we enjoy having you here. So welcome and enjoy the show. Hey, everyone. Welcome to the podcast today. Please come in, join me. This podcast is an open door for those seeking a little hope that'll spark a fire. This is Spread Hope Like Fire. I'm your host, Tony the Beat. I bring this podcast to you, or at least try to, every Tuesday and Thursday of each and every week. You can get this podcast several ways: iTunes, SoundCloud, Google Play Store, Overcast, and you can even go on YouTube, type in Spread Hope Like Fire and listen to it on there, which doesn't make sense, but if you don't have access to the podcast in these ways, you probably aren't even hearing this, but you can go and let your friends know that it is on YouTube as well. A couple ways that I like to ask everyone to support this show is to rate it, review it, Facebook it, Instagram it, Snapchat it, Vine it, MySpace it, LiveJournal it, tell a friend, tell your mom, tell anybody that you can, that you listen to this podcast and you love it. Also, I'd like to mention that this is a listener-supported podcast, which is supported by you lovely listeners. I urge everyone each and every week to head over onto patreon.com/spreadhopelikefire. Become a patron. Help support the show. Help me further this message. Help me further the community. Help me further help others that are in need of help. I said help quite a lot. I like to think of it as a virtual tip jar, but also in other ways, to help, like I said, further this show. Again, I tell you, head over to patreon.com/spreadhopelikefire. And now I'd like to get into the show. When's the last time you went to the movies? When's the last time you stepped foot on a school campus? When's the last time you attended a concert? Were you shot at? Were you bullied? Did you have some sort of altercation? Do you know anyone who lost their lives at any of these events or places? Sadly, our society has turned into something where a simple movie turns into losing your life. Sending your kids to school, you may not see them come home again. Attending a concert, maybe the funnest, greatest time of your life. Seeing someone you really enjoy singing, but you may not come home from that concert. You see, our society has come into an age of what is called active shooters. I like to call them terrorist attacks. I want to get to the bottom of why and how these terrorist attacks are happening and what's causing these people to lash out. For me, there's a lot of factors that I think go into this issue, and there's a lot of factors that need to be looked at. Mental health is one of them. I hear a lot of people arguing about how it's gun control and how it's more laws. But I urge everyone to start talking, start sharing, start opening up and being respectful of each other's views. And let's try to get to the bottom of this, because too many people are dying. Too many people are suffering. These shootings have become something so common. And like I said on Tuesday's podcast, I was bullied a lot in school. Very badly, to the point of it gave me low self-esteem and depression and other issues. But there was this one incident in seventh grade. Columbine happened. These two kids went into their school and they took guns and bombs and shot and murdered people, teachers. anybody that was in their way. And for me as a kid back then, I didn't understand what was going on. I didn't understand fully that these kids were troubled and possibly bullied. And I don't really remember too much of the background of what happened at Columbine, but I remember being in junior high at the time, and there was this one kid that was in eighth grade. I was in seventh grade, and he had also been picked on and bullied, but he also was a bully. He picked on me a lot. He picked on others. He made it a point to make your life or day miserable for that day. And so when Columbine happened that week, it was like the end of the week, I think, and I had gotten pulled into the principal's office with several other kids, and I was the last one to get there. And it was the end of school, and they told me I had to go to the principal's office. And I walk in, and there's other kids I know, and I sit down. And I thought I was in trouble. I thought I did something wrong. I don't know. And the principal had explained that this one kid had been identified and had been plotting the next Columbine, and they had found a hit list. And one of the kids within that room was the one that came forward and told school officials that they had suspected that this kid was going to come to school the next week and kill us. And we had all been on that hit list. And he said that we were, that the kid was going to make us the next Columbine. And I remember at the time, that was what was going around throughout the entire nation, is that kids were threatening to make schools the next Columbine, the next massacre. And so I was scared. I didn't know what to do. And my mom didn't know where I was. I was at the end of school. We didn't have cell phones back then, so I couldn't really call her and say, hey, I'm in the principal's office. Someone wants to murder me. But we had gone through the process, the court process and the hearing, and I had to testify and say what the kid had done to me bullying wise. And he had gestured at a few of us that day in PE that, you know, he's going to kill us with a shotgun. But, you know, he made the gesture of the shotgun and shot at us. And we didn't think nothing of it until we learned that he had written out a list of people that he was going to murder. And that scared the crap out of me. And now we flash forward to 2018. And this is a common aspect of our lives. We can't go anywhere without worrying about what's going to happen. Are we going to make it out alive? I mean, I went from school in the 90s to the early 2000s, and this was all new to us. And I returned to school around 2013, getting my bachelor's degree at a community college, and that was my first step. But I remember going to every class that week, and the introduction for every class covered what to do if there's an active shooter. That really got to me. Every class they talked about what to do if there's an active shooter, where to go, how to barricade the doors, how to stay safe. This is what our society has turned into, is this is what you have to do because you never know if there's going to be an active shooter. And so that brings me to my next point, is what has caused people to lash out so much and want to kill other people in this manner. It's a very hard thing to understand. And I think mental health plays a big role in these people lashing out. Society has changed. It's coming off its hinges. And it's something that is normal to us now. I can't go to a movie theater without thinking I'm going to get shot at. So I really don't go to movie theaters. And just like school, I mean, that first week was terrifying. Every class, if there's an active shooter, you do this, you do that, you do this, you know, barricade the doors. To me, I was thinking it's every man for himself, but you know, I just switched into going to online school, a lot safer, at least I hoped. And so society has made this media thing where it's entertainment to a certain extent. You hear about all the lives that were lost, all the rampage and carnage that was left behind. And you can, like, Columbine, Colorado, at the movie theater, Orlando, San Bernardino, you hear about all these shootings, and you have the media right there up in everybody's faces interviewing people, and what they want to know the stories. What happened? How did it happen? Give us the details, and then let's remember the victims. And a week later, 2 weeks later, all these victims, all the events that have taken place with that mass shooting and terrorist attack and active shooting, they're forgotten because they're on to the next event of active shooters killing people. And these other people that were in these events are forgotten, but they're still living their lives. They're still having to deal with the after effects of what they've gone through, that they've survived. They may have been wounded, but they may have survived. They may have been physically wounded or mentally wounded. Either way, they're wounded in so many ways that they can't go on with normal lives anymore because they are stuck with so many problems. Anxiety, depression, PTSD. I remember that I had a professor one time in my psychology class tell me that PTSD did not stand for post-traumatic stress disorder, that PTSD stood for something completely different. He said PTSD stood for, please tell me why some wounds do not heal. I think that's a great sentiment as to what happens with these events that take place within our society. It leaves so many people struggling, so many people not knowing what to do, reaching their wits' end. And like I started talking about on Tuesday, and I was really adamant and passionate about getting that message across about suicide. People in these events commit suicide because they don't know how to handle or deal with the problems that they had been given. This situation was something they didn't want, but they were given. And a lot of people don't understand why. And so as a society, people that don't understand why sit on the sidelines and they argue. It's gun control. It's we need more laws, stricter laws, get rid of the guns. And then you have people that are in my side that are talking more of mental health, but we're not really arguing. It's more of us that are in mental health, the profession of mental health, and talking about some of the aspects that led up to these events and what these people that have lashed out and committed these massive murders have gone through. And I'm not trying to humanize these people whatsoever. They're still very evil and have spread destruction across so many people's lives. And it's sad, but mental disorders play a large role in a lot of the problems and a lot of the shootings that we see. I feel that we need to come together as a community and as a society and talk about and try to figure out what the cause of these problems are, what the cause truly is, and not argue one point and try to be right and scream and yell at the other person that you're right, because it's not getting us anywhere. It's not furthering the conversation. When has the last time you've ever been in a conversation or a debate where you're being yelled at and you say all of a sudden, oh, they're yelling at me. Now I understand. Stupid me. All they had to do was yell it at me and now I get it. Never. So I want to continue this conversation. I want people to start talking about what they think. And I encourage you, let's talk about this on Twitter. Hashtag Spread Hope Like Fire podcast and tweet me. At TonyTheBeat85, let's start talking about the issues that we think that we need fixed. I like to think and take the side of Socrates. He always had this stance that he never knew anything in the world, that he was always learning, that he was always changing his mind. People were changing his mind. Things were changing his mind. He never really knew the truth of the world. And I think taking that step and taking that viewpoint is something that we all should do in order to further understand where and what is going on. Because for me, I'm always open-minded to where I want someone to change my mind at some sort of view that I have that may be wrong. and let them explain to me why this other viewpoint, as opposed to my own, is a better one than the one I have. And many times I've learned that way to understand and better myself. And I think that's what needs to be going on, is for us to better understand and not think we know everything in the world, that we know how to solve every single problem, because that's what's going on now. Everyone thinks they're an expert. For me, I'm not an expert. I know I'm not an expert in this field. But you have these young kids on campuses screaming and yelling. You have adults at rallies screaming and yelling that they know what's going on and they're experts and statistically this, statistically that. But there's no resolution that's come from all these shootings ever since Columbine's happened. The shootings just multiply. And they continue to grow, and it's something that isn't going away. I think that bullying, I think that discrimination, I think that the harshness of our society, is what has spurred on people not feeling welcome, people not feeling normal, people being segregated to a certain degree and left alone. And when they're left alone without any support, they become something that they were not. They enter a dark place. They enter this darkness that they can't escape. And we see this darkness expressed in these horrific, horrific tragedies that we're seeing. Sadly, I look at the world and I see that it's getting darker. The darkness is slowly taking over the light. I still like to believe that there's more light within the world than there is darkness. But like I said, I see so much tragedy that's continuously growing and continuously spreading and is common within our world, that there's something that needs to be done. I would like to hear other people's takes on this. This is my take, and I'm probably not right on a lot of things, but mental health plays a lot in everybody's lives. When people reach the end of their rope, they lash out in ways that they never thought they would be able to, or never thought they would lash out. That may be violence, that may be self-harm, that may be drugs, that may be shooting other people and killing other people. It's just something that happens when people reach the end of their rope. They have no way of seeing a way out of their situation. And so with that, I'd like to invite all of you to welcome my next guest on the show. It's a good friend of mine, Michelle. She's a survivor of the Route 91 tragedy, the concert that happened in Las Vegas, where an active shooter at the Mandalay Bay Resort had plotted to murder as many people as he could at this concert and rented a room that had a perfect view of the event. And she is here to share her story about surviving that night, what she went through that night, the recovery process that she's going through from that night to the day we talked on this podcast. And she's a very inspirational person to hear, and I want to make sure that her message is heard clearly. So I think what I'm going to do is break up this podcast with her in either two or three episodes so that it doesn't feel rushed. I know that with certain podcasts that go on for more than an hour or so, viewers start to miss a lot of the messages, and I don't want that to happen with her message. I want people to be able to clearly and wholeheartedly hear her story and her struggles, and hopefully help those of you who have been in such situations, such tragedies where there was an active shooter and you survived, or you knew someone that was in one, or you knew someone that passed away in one. And so with that, I want to make sure that her story is heard and heard clearly. So I'm going to break it up and have her on for the next 2 or 3 weeks so that everyone can hear and understand and hopefully gain something from her words and her struggles and her story. And I know it's inspiring. It inspired me, and I know it's going to inspire a lot of other people, and hopefully it's going to help for you to either reach out for the help that you need or get the help you need through just listening to her words on what happened that night. And so I'm very honored to have Michelle on the show, and I'm throwing it over to our interview. So this is part one of our interview, and welcome Michelle to the podcast. I remember doing homework. I was writing a paper that night, and I had the TV on just randomly on one of the news stations, and it had come on that there was an active shooter at the concert, and I started freaking out because I knew, I think, about like 8 or 9 people that were there. And so I ended up getting on to Facebook and my phone and text messaging everybody and messaging them through Facebook to see where they were. And I had never, I mean, most people will turn on the news and see all these active shootings, and no, there's really no connection. They're just, you feel bad or whatever the case is. I never had felt scared to a certain degree because I knew so many people there, and I didn't know what to do. I felt helpless because I wanted to make sure everybody was okay, and I got like 3 responses out of the like 9 or 10 people. And so I was freaking out trying to figure out where the other people were. And I remember thinking, Michelle, I was like, where's Michelle too? Cause I couldn't get a hold of you. I don't have your phone number, but I've messaged you through Facebook, and I was so worried. And I stayed up that whole night, and I was just trying to figure out where you guys were. And I ended up getting my girlfriend up and telling her too, like, there's a mass shooting going on at that concert, and the twins are there, which are mutual friends of ours, Hope and Faith, people we've worked with, and we didn't know how to process what was going on, and it was so scary for us. But not just, it was a different fear from actually just seeing what was going on and seeing the tragedy and seeing people being trampled. And I felt hopeless. I didn't know what was going to happen. I didn't know. I was hoping and praying that somehow everybody would be okay, but you could tell just with like the pictures, right, the video, people weren't okay. Like, they were running out, there was blood on them, people were being carried out. And I remember going to school the next day, and we had we do check-ins because of just us being in the mental health field, and everyone knew I was just kind of like out of it. And so they came to me, and my professor was like, hey Tony, like, are you okay? And I was like, no, I still have like 2 friends that I haven't heard from, and I don't know if they're okay. And they were involved in the shooting, and so we talked about it, and we were just talking about all the aspects that go into this topic and how we all agree that there should just be some middle ground to help other people deal with this, and that we see so much of this almost on an daily basis, monthly basis. And like the first shooting I remember was Columbine.
Yeah, that was horrific,
and like that was something completely new to
American culture, and I think that started it off was Columbine. And I was in junior high when that happened, and now it's just so common.
It's more than common now. You hear it at least once a week, once a month. A lot of the stuff they don't even make a big deal of it anymore.
So, yeah, I mean,
being because it's so common.
Yeah, it's become part of American culture, really.
Yeah.
I remember the shooting for that Batman movie. Like, I have anxiety going in. I don't like going to the movie theaters anymore.
I haven't been to the movies since. Well, I went one time with my girlfriends, and I couldn't even enjoy the film, so.
Yeah, like, I'll sit. I make it a point to sit closest to the exit door that I know that is locked when we go. Because I don't know, and then I get really bad. I wasn't even there, but I have bad anxiety as it is.
Well, I've always, I know this sounds morbid, but I've always planned in my escape route, no matter where I've gone. I've always thought, you know, I just need to make sure I know where to go, how to get out, just in case. So I've always planned that, but now it's even more so. And I don't like to, I like to sit where I can see everything that's going on. But I also like to be close to the exit. So, it's my new normal. We have what's called a new normal.
It's sad that we have to, that there's people out there that actually think these things, because we have to.
We have to.
It's like it's forced upon us now that we have to, we don't know if we're going to something that we may not come out of it. Like, just a simple movie. I remember going to the movies when I was a kid, and it was a fun experience, and now it's really not.
Well, they just had a fake shooter, you can call him, go into a Las Vegas mall just a couple of weeks ago. A man with a hoodie on and a mask walked in with a fake rifle, and, you know, total mayhem. They had to evacuate the entire mall, and this is in Las Vegas. There's a lot of people in there. They did 3 sweeps and still couldn't find him, so, I mean, it's just the new normal now.
I mean, yeah, it's a sad thing. I mean, you heard my point of view, and I mean, I was watching it and scared. I don't know how you guys, all of you guys, I've heard your guys' stories. I've heard Faith's, I think, the most, because she's opened up a little more about it.
Yeah, she's starting to open up quite a bit. Theirs was a little more, I guess trauma is trauma. You can't really put it on a level 1 to 10, but they were more in, excuse my expression, kill zone. They were more in that area of where a lot of the deceased were shot and killed. So they saw quite a bit more carnage than I did, although I did see quite a bit on my way out of the venue. But it makes you have a newfound respect for your first responders and your military, who have to see that on a daily basis or monthly basis or yearly basis, whereas we saw it one night and we still aren't the same. I don't think we'll ever be the same. We'll never be able to unhear what we heard or unsee what we saw. And it will stay with us for the rest of our lives.
I never thought I would know anybody in, like, a event that took, like, an active shooting type of thing. And to know that I know, like, 8 or 9, I think it's, like, 8 or 9 people that were there.
Yeah, there was approximately 2,200 people there, so they said, at that time. But imagine just total mayhem and first confusion, and then after that it was complete mayhem and everyone trying to run and get out of harm's way, and to not know where your loved ones were for quite a while, and then to finally find out the ultimate. It just wasn't something you want to relive, but it helps me to talk about it. The friends that I was actually there with, we don't talk about it together. We actually haven't really spent that much time together since then. Everybody deals with it in its own way. Mine, I wanted therapy right away. I wanted to face it head on. And I tend to talk about it a lot because it helps me heal. Whereas they like to not deal with it. They don't, you know, and that's just their way of handling it. And that's fine. That's, everybody has their ways. But, and I guess it could be annoying or inhibiting for them to heal if I'm talking about it a lot. But for me, it's what's helping me heal. So.
Yeah, talking about it really, it lets you process things more quickly, I feel, and acknowledge what happened. I mean, most people don't want to relive certain events in their lives, especially something where you're seeing other people being killed.
Right.
And I remember, like, seeing you got you. I remember Vanessa, which is our mutual friend, she was excited to go, and she was posting, like, that week, she was getting ready, she had her boots ready, and then I seen the twins, Hope and Faith, which is also our mutual friend, they were getting ready to go, and everybody was excited, and I seen on through Facebook all these posts, getting ready for Vegas, and then I seen all your guys' posts, right. How happy everybody was, and then I remember the picture of, I think it was you and Vanessa.
Yeah.
I remember that picture, and you guys, I was like, oh, well, I'm glad they're all having fun. And, I mean, I like going on Facebook because there is a lot of negativity.
Right.
That I don't like going on, but when I do go on, I like seeing everybody's having fun and just seeing that my friends and family are enjoying life. And, I mean, contrast that from being so happy and excited and seeing that build up to Sunday night.
Complete devastation.
And it's...
Yeah, and they were all there, but we weren't there together. I had gone with my group of friends. They had gone with their group of friends. And Vanessa and her boyfriend Roy had gone together. And unfortunately, I didn't even get to see the twins the whole weekend long. And Vanessa and I had just met 20 minutes before we were running for our lives. We decided we were going to take pictures together. So I told her, I'll come over and we'll just at least take pictures. And we had a full-on conversation about anxiety and how her boyfriend felt about going up towards the stage. Vanessa, I guess, wanted to go towards the stage. And Roy asked me to talk to her about that. And he had anxiety about it. And I get that because I have very high anxiety about that. I don't like to be in the big middle of a crowd like that. I like to be able to have control of my situation in the event of something like this. And my words verbatim to Vanessa was, baby girl, trust me, you don't want to be up there. If he has anxiety, I get it. I have the same thing. And in the event of an emergency, you want to be able to get out and you don't want to get trampled. And I mean, this was my conversation with her 20 minutes later. We're running for our lives. And I just felt like I jinxed us in some way, which I know sounds ridiculous. But when you have trauma brain, nothing sounds ridiculous anymore. Everything makes sense to you. So to me, that makes sense. Like, I feel like I jinxed us. And 20 minutes later, we're running for our lives. And I had no idea where she was, where Hope and Faith were. And at that moment, when you honestly don't think you're gonna make it out, my only thoughts were them. I mean, I'm older, I've had a great life. Do I want it to be longer? Absolutely. But if I had to go home to the Lord tomorrow, at least I did have a full life. I have a wonderful son I've raised, and I just want them to experience life like that. And they were too young to be taken away. So, until I heard from them, which Vanessa's amazing. I mean, she has more strength than she knows. Because she was the first one to message me and tell me that, where she was. And that she was okay, and that her and Roy made it. and to check to make sure I did. And she did everything she could to reach the twins and find out if they were okay, to let me know that they were okay. And that speaks volumes of her character there alone. She's pretty amazing. But, yeah, I have quite a bit of survivor's guilt. New words that I've learned. Trauma brain, survivor's guilt, PTSD, and anxiety are things I never used to have before. I've never had anxiety before in my life and never understood it because my boyfriend suffers from it pretty bad, to the point where he has to take medication for it. And a lot of the times I lose my patience with him because I don't get it. And now, trust me, I get it. It's debilitating.
Yeah, my girlfriend, I know living with her is, I put her through a lot. Because she doesn't, she doesn't get it. My family doesn't understand how anxiety works. And simple things in life become so hard to do with anxiety. Yeah. Because you overthink everything.
Well, it just takes over your whole body. It takes over your whole being.
And, I'll have full-on anxiety attacks that lead into panic attacks where I feel like I'm just going to die.
Right.
And people around you don't get it. And at that moment, like, you don't really care. But afterwards, I feel, like, embarrassed. Because it's like, oh my God, something so simple turned into this big event where everybody's worried about you.
Where you get blamed for being dramatic. I know I've used that word before for my boyfriend. I have actually used that word before on him, that he was being dramatic. But it's not until you go through something, until you suffer that yourself, that you honestly don't know. And anxiety is, it's horrible.
For those that don't understand anxiety or have never had it, I mean, I envy you.
Right. It can actually make you feel like you're actually having a heart attack. Like you're actually, you completely lose control.
You feel like you're dying.
Yeah. Everything's overtaken. You're just. And you can't stop it.
And people that don't understand it, that you are involved with, I mean, either romantically or your family, and they just don't, there's no way to really explain how you feel with anxiety.
No.
It's a feeling, and you can't, I mean, you can, how well can you really explain love or hatred or anger or, well, anger you can probably, you can do pretty good with that.
Probably to an extent you can explain. It's like a heaviness. It just.
I mean, I don't know what I would, I know what would probably be going through my head if it was me in that situation. Just, I would be thinking about everybody back home.
As soon as I got to where I felt I was a little bit safe, I actually ran and Superman dove under some bleachers and the bullets actually hit right behind me. I could actually feel each puff of air as each bullet hit behind us. And at this point, unfortunately, I had gotten separated from my group. There was a group of eight of us, and in my mind, as my capeless hero was telling me what to do, my friend Tammy that I was with, her brother is a police officer in Inglewood, and he knew exactly what the first few pops were, and once that bump guard was set, he knew exactly what was happening, and he went into straight police mode, and he got us all down on the ground and laid on top of us and told us what to do, and I listened to every word he said because he made sure that we all were listening. And he said, when I tell you to run, you guys run. When I yell run, you run. And in my mind, I had already watched the bullets deflect off of a staircase because we thought that it was fireworks. The people behind me were, the girl was screaming and her boyfriend was telling her it was just fireworks. And I had just watched Richard mouth that's a automatic weapon, and he was scanning the whole crowd looking for it. I mean, he went straight into police mode, and I'm watching him, and I heard him say, "It's automatic weapon," twice. And when the girl behind me screamed, and her boyfriend was like, "No, that's fireworks," and I said, "Well, I see the smoke," and I just happened to point to where I saw the smoke. Actually, it wasn't even smoke. It was the bullets deflecting off the metal staircase. So when I said that, Richard turned around, and when he saw what I was talking about, he just went white. He just threw us on the ground, covered us, and was telling us what to do. He was trying to get everyone around us down as well, but no one was listening to him in the chaos. And in my mind, I was just plotting which way I'm going to run. I'm just picturing the venue and where there's metal. I'm like, okay, well, I just watched metal deflect those bullets, so I'm going to run where there's metal. And if they were talking about which way to run when he was giving the instructions, I wasn't listening, because at that point I was in survival mode and trying to plan which way I was going to run. And so when he yelled run, I ran the opposite direction that they did, because I was running towards the bleachers. And when I Superman dove under there, that's where the bullets hit. And I actually met some people who helped do the cleanup, and I use that term loosely, at my 6-month candlelight vigil in Las Vegas for Route 91. And they told me there was actually marks in those bleachers from the bullets. So I know I didn't imagine that, because I felt that. I honestly thought that I was going to die. And so I did say my prayer, and very calmly, which was bizarre because a huge wave of calmness came over me. And after my prayer, and I took my phone out, and the first call I made was to my boyfriend. And unfortunately, he didn't answer because he's a milkman, so he gets up very early in the morning. And so I called my friend Kim, who unfortunately wasn't able to come with us. She was supposed to be there, and thankfully she wasn't, because I know her. She would have been right there front by the stage, and I wouldn't want to lose her, so I'm very glad she wasn't there. But I called her so she could tell my son goodbye for me and tell him how much I loved him and how proud I am of him. And I felt that only a mother can convey to another mother how much they love their children. So I knew that she'd be able to, in that event, tell my son exactly what I needed him to know if I didn't make it out of there. And because there was no way I was going to have my son listen to that racket behind me, or have my son possibly hear me get shot. Because at that point, we didn't know where the bullets were coming from, and the venue was so loud, it's wide open, and there's echoing. It legitimately sounded like there was bullets coming from every single direction all around us, and like there was nowhere safe to run. Actually, that's what it sounded like to me. But so, but you're right. I mean, you worry about people at home, like things that you still need to do or unfinished, that, you know. And then my next worry was where my friends were, and then getting out of there. That was the next one. So
I remember talking to Faith, and she said that she got back to me that night, and she wasn't really making sense. All she said was, "I'm in a hotel room. I'm fine. We got pulled into a hotel room. I'm fine."
Yeah, they actually were in, I want to say it's kind of like a timeshare place. They made it out. And a really nice security guard, I guess, broke down a door for them, a glass door. And so they were able to get in to where the rooms were, or little mini suites. And I guess they banged on doors until someone would let them in. This nice couple took in about 30 or 40 of them, from what I understand, and kept them safe for the rest of the night. So
she said that also after the fact, when I talked to her when they got home, that She was jumping over, climbing fences, jumping yeah. over hurdles, right. barricades, and from the bleachers, where did you go?
Well, I was under the bleachers the whole time I was making these phone calls. It seems, the funny thing is it seems like I was under there for hours, but honestly, we were out within minutes. Bodies were falling on me. And the whole time these bodies were falling on me, I was thinking that they were shot because the bullets hit right behind me. So I was thinking that they were dead bodies or possibly injured people falling on me. And all I could think of was, well, this is good. This is really good because they're going to protect me. And if the shooters come, they'll think I'm dead too. So I'll be safe under here. So I'm just going to stay here. And they weren't injured at all. They were actually Superman diving under there just like I did. So, but you don't know that until after the fact. I mean, you kind of go into this like tunnel vision and it's kind of like a dream where you don't really have the sense of reality. You just, it seems like it's forever and you have all these scenarios going in your head, but you don't really know what's right or wrong. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's kind of like time stands still.
Right. And at that point, my friend Tammy was calling me. And she's my other capeless hero. She kept calling me, and she wasn't going to stop until she found me. Because, like I said, I was separated. And she told me that I needed to get out from under those bleachers and make it out of the venue. And I was convinced I was just going to stay there and wait it out. But when she said, Richard said, we all have to get out, then it was like, well, Richard saved me this far. I need to listen to what he says. So somehow I wiggled out from under all those people. I don't, honestly, to this day, don't remember how I got out from under all of them because I was legitimately under a bunch of people. And I came out, and it was just like trying to merge into traffic. I just remember that it was just complete mayhem. And bullets, you could hear the bullets flying over your head and whizzing by. And I just remember somebody stepped on the back of my sandal and I just face planted. I went straight down to the ground and then I started to get trampled. Luckily, Tammy was calling me and I had my phone in my hand and I held my phone up and was just screaming for help because I was being trampled. And this really tall young gentleman, I don't know, I still haven't found him, he scooped me up. He yelled at everybody and said, stop, you're hurting her. And he put his hand under my underarms and he lifted me up like I was a little rag doll. And he started yelling at the crowd and telling them, you know, we're going to get out of here if you guys would just calm down. Like, we need to listen to each other. We need to help each other. And luckily, we did. We listened to him and we formed this little snake and we just kind of etched our way out until we got through where there was the food trucks and then there was the vendors. And I haven't found which vendor it is yet either, but she tore down half her vending booth and was like yelling at us to run this way. And nobody was listening. They were, once we could all break free, they were just running and running towards Las Vegas Boulevard. And I remember I was running with them because when you're by yourself, you're like, what are we going to do? Where are you going to go? Yeah. So I started to run with them and some voice in my head just told me, stop, don't go that way and just turn around, go back. And I just remember just stopping dead in my tracks. And I was like, okay, I'll go back. And I remember turning around and I ran over to her and I said, I'll go this way. And she said, okay, sweetheart. She held her lattice part of her booth down again and she was grabbed my arm and I remember she looked me in my eyes and she said, don't look down, whatever you do, don't look down, sweetheart, just run. And I'm just a very defiant person, so the first thing I did was look down and just see all the carnage, all the shot people shot and the bloody bodies or their friends are full of blood because, you know, they're dragging them out or they're being hit. at that time, because there were still bullets flying this whole entire time. And I just remember running towards the street, and all I could see was one police officer at that point. There was one police officer, and he was in the middle of the street, and he was waving at us, come on, come on, and it just kept running right towards him. And when I got to the street, I stopped. I don't know why I stopped. I guess I felt like I was safe once I was out of there, and the cop was right there. And then total mayhem started again, of course. And then I just made it into the Tropicana, and then I was on lockdown there till 6 a.m. the next morning. Unfortunately, that is where I was reunited with my group of friends. So, and then that's when Vanessa let me know that her and Roy were safe, and that she heard from the twins and they were safe. And then the twins messaged me, and they really wanted me to go find them. And I felt helpless because they were so scared and I couldn't get to them. And I also told them that they should go to that concert because they would have the time of their lives. And we all know how that turned out, so I have a lot of guilt for that. I have a lot of guilt for a lot of that because I convinced them all they should go. And then that turned out to be the worst night of their lives.
I mean, I can understand the guilt, and I can understand the emotions that go behind it.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many factors that go into this shooting that, I mean,
but like you said, you just look at all of our pictures leading up to, it's a 3-day country concert, so Friday, Saturday, even Sunday leading up to that 10 o'clock hour, it was the best time ever. I mean, me and my girls had an amazing time, and that was going to be our annual girls trip. I mean, that was our second event going, so... And now it's scarred.
And everybody in your groups, they all survived.
We all made it out. Okay. None of us were physically injured other than bumps and bruises and scrapes. We all had those. But mentally, we were all a little screwed up. I can only speak for myself now, but I'm still dealing with that.
Yeah. Did you reunite with the twins?
No, I never even seen the twins the whole entire trip. Just Facebook posts and messages. We planned to get together and have a drink, but, you know, it's in Vegas. You try to get pool time in. You try to get gambling in. You try to just do Vegas and do the concert, which is virtually impossible because the concert is from 2 in the afternoon till midnight all 3 days, so you're pretty exhausted, and it's hot out there, and it's just a lot to do. And so unfortunately I didn't get to meet up with them at all during that time. But
and then so you were held in the Tropicana until 6
till 6 a.m. Yeah, they had us on lockdown the whole time when SWAT came in and TSA searched all of us and searched the building and said that it was warranted, it's safe that we were able to stay there. But we all stayed in one huge convention room, and they tried to make it comfortable for us. They gave us bed sheets and towels and water. But, you know, from all the running and diving and, you know, your body, you just feel like you got hit by a Mack truck. So it's kind of hard to lay on a hard floor or try to get comfortable or even try to relax, because you still don't know what happened and you still don't know if it's safe where you are. Yeah, sure, SWAT's in there with us, but they also came in looking for people of question twice the whole time we were in there. So that didn't make you feel very safe, you know.
Okay, I didn't think of that.
Yeah. At one point, when we were at the Tropicana, we came out from the basement, and they said, you know, SWAT says the building is safe. You can come out now. And it was business as usual. They actually opened the doors, and they let people come in with suitcases, you know, to check in. And that just did not rest easy with me, because I don't know who these people are or what's in their suitcase. I mean, some lunatic just shot at us, and I didn't feel safe at all whatsoever. And then it wasn't but maybe 5 minutes later, they started yelling at us again, and suits started running towards us, and they said, everybody get into one area. And then that's when SWAT decided to search us all and put us in one confined area just to make sure, because apparently we weren't safe. So I never know.
And on that note, I'd like to end the show and thank Michelle for part one of sharing her experience with us all. It's greatly appreciated. It's greatly going to help many people hear her story. Michelle had mentioned that she's part of a support group that is on Facebook. It's Route 91 Survivors 805. It's a public group. I encourage everybody that is connected or needs that support from that event to join the group again. It's Route 91 Survivors 805. And I can't wait to have Michelle back on the show later next week. And she's going to talk about more of the aftermath of the experience that she went through dealing with this tragedy. And I'd like to thank Michelle once more. And please, I encourage everyone to head over to patreon.com/spreadhopelikefire. Join Michelle as a patron on that account to help support this podcast, and so that we can build this community even bigger to help everyone that's going through life struggles or tragedies or just needs a helping hand. Again, that's patreon.com/spreadhopelikefire. For Tony the Beat, thank you for joining us. We'll see you next week. Spread Hope Like Fire is a production of the Spread Hope Like Fire Foundation, a 501c3 nonprofit. As always, I like to remind everybody, the things that we discuss upon the podcast are not a substitute or a replacement for seeking treatment and getting professional help. If in fact you are struggling with your mental health, we urge you to please reach out to your community and see which professionals are accepting new clients and get that professional help and talking to that professional that you need. This show is intended as a educational and informational psychoeducation of the field of psychology. For Spread Hope Like Fire and Anthony G, I'm Anthony G, and we will see you later.